cartoonist, novelist, and creative dynamo Linda Barry has a national reputation for her award-winning book, What It Is, and before that for being the creator of Ernie Pook's Comique, featuring the characters Marlis and Freddy.
These days, she says if she had to choose between sitting down and talking to the most famous, celebrated, and accomplished adult in the world and a kid, she'd choose the kid every time. She's an art professor at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, but she spends a lot of her time helping kids dig into the art of drawing.
Lately, she's been working with kids at the Children's Museum in Madison, where she's collaborated with and been inspired by the way children think about the world and how they draw it on paper. Her new exhibit there is called Drawing Fast and Slow, the comp book art of Linda Barry. It's the first exhibit of Barry's work to appear outside of New York, and it's on display in the community concourse at the Madison Children's Museum through the end of January.
Earlier this week, Linda Barry sat down with Veronica Rickert to talk about her new exhibit, why she loves hanging out with kids, and the creative process.
I want to start by asking you about a quote from one of your pieces at the Madison Children's Museum. You've got a new exhibit there, and I'm going to describe it a little bit because this is radio. It's a pop box with a cat sleeping on it, and the quote within the box reads, "At the center of everything we call the arts and children call play is something that seems somehow alive." Can you explain a little bit more about what you think is alive in that artistic play space?
I'd like to talk about how this use of this thing that I'm calling alive, we start to do it before we can even talk. And the best way to explain it is this idea of a kid getting attached to a toy or a blanket. So we'll give an example of a blanket. So we know the blanket's not alive, right? You and I know the blanket's not alive. The kid has the feeling that the blanket is alive, and eventually the whole family recognizes that the blanket has some kind of life. It's not alive in the way you and I are alive, but if you said, is the blanket dead? You know, no, the blanket's not dead. The blanket's not alive. The blanket's not dead. The blanket's something in between. And that typifies to me images in the image world and the arts. You know, when you think of Scrooge, is he alive? Well, no. Is he dead? No, he's something else. He's in the image world. So that's what I'm talking about. It's this aliveness where the thing that you're playing with seems to be able to play back.
Mm. Well, you've been working with kids who do a lot of playing and drawing of images. You've been working with kids at the Madison Children's Museum. And I know this is a labor of love for you. What kinds of things have you been doing with the kids there?
Well, one of the things that I've been doing is I've been trying to find a space where my students at the University of Wisconsin can work with kids, and I'm there to kind of facilitate it. Because, one, in my own experience, it's always been an interaction with a kid that's gotten me out of any kind of creative jam. And so I wanted to make that available to my students. And I also am really concerned about the fact that in our modern life, kids don't interact with other adults who they're either not related to or haven't been vetted in this strong way. So is there a place that's safe for them to talk to strangers? Hmm. And one of the best things to do when you're talking to strangers is not just talk, but build something together. So the show at the Madison Children's Museum is a show of some of the, you know, those composition notebooks with the marble covers, those black and white ones? So I've been keeping those since I was 19, and I'm 60.
And you got one in front of you right now.
Yeah, I keep them with me all the time. And so I do about 12 a year. So you can imagine how many I have. It's a tower. It's taller than I am. And so the museum is showing some of those comp books. And I wanted to do something so that I could get the kids at the museum and my students to work together to make these comp books, because there's something about just gluing stuff onto paper and writing down stuff and drawing together that is a good kind of interaction that I feel like is really missing from the modern world, particularly for kids. And I also notice with my students, so my students are in their maybe 19 to in their 20s, they don't really know how to use scissors. They have a difficult time. They don't know how to use a ruler. Like if you ask them to take a 9x12 piece of paper and make it 8.5x11 and you give them a ruler and some scissors, there's this terrified look. And so I'm curious about what's going to happen to our hands and our ability to work together. And also I got really interested when I came to the university about why grad students were so miserable. And why that was so acceptable. And I wondered if getting grad students together with pre-K kids as co-researchers on their dissertations and their thesis. I did this for a year, would make a difference.
And did it?
Yeah, absolutely. Just in terms of the disposition toward the world. And I found that when people who are working on very difficult academic problems actually work with kids and ask them questions or play with them, it's as if you can borrow that state of mind. And that state of mind is essential to discovery and intuition, this odd, open state of mind. For instance, I had a mathematician, a grad student, who was contemplating what numbers were, and we were around some kids, and he goes, for example, what's five? And this kid goes, I'm five. So it's that kind of stuff, you know, and see how you laughed and how I laughed. And so something happened when we just laughed at that. It wasn't like, oh, it's not just, oh, how sweet. I would imagine that there's an immune system boost. There's a stress reduction. So I think all this stuff actually is tied together and has something to do with not just our mental health, but our physical health as well.
So the kids are helping the formerly miserable grad students. What do the kids get out of interacting with adults that you were saying you think this is missing in our society? The kids don't get to interact with non-vetted grown-ups. What do the kids get about talking to these grad students?
Well, for one thing, they get students who aren't talking to them as if they're children. You know how people talk to kids and how they read everything in this sort of voice that just makes you go nuts? So there are actual conversations, sort of deep conversations, and the kids draw along with my students. We do a thing called tandem drawing where two people will be drawing simultaneously. One's the leader and then the other one turns into the leader, so your hand moves like a Ouija board kind of. The kids tell my students' stories, and the students write them down, and then they draw the pictures. So in the end, the kid gets little books or gets their stories written down. So they start to think of themselves as writers and artists, even though they might not have those words. So it's a real – when the program ended, it was called Drawbridge. You know, there was a lot of just sadness about missing each other. I miss the kids I worked with, and I know my students miss the kids they worked with and vice versa.
We're talking with artist and cartoonist and author Linda Berry right now on Central Time. She has a new exhibit at the Madison Children's Museum. And it seems as though some of the pieces you have on exhibit use an image that a kid has drawn, and then you take your spin on it on the adjacent page. And there's one of it's like a celestial squid or an octopus. And you're asking kids to use what you call an ordinary superpower, to put themselves into a different place or time or situation. Can you talk a little bit more about what you think that ordinary superpower is and why it matters?
Well, the ordinary superpower is the power to make a story. Just make a story out of if you sit down with a kid and you say, let's make a story, nothing really happens. But if you say, I have a story about a rabbit, and I know that the rabbit encounters a fire, but I don't know where. And the kid will tell you. And you start to build this world, and by the time you're done, it's as if that world already existed. So that's an ordinary superpower to me. And also drawing. Drawing, if I could just unhitch drawing from the pulling the cart of art and fine art, if I could just take it and put it where it belongs, which is in language, it's a language. And so it's a language in that, say, you and I can't speak, but if I want some coffee, I can draw a cup of coffee with a question mark next to it and hold it up to you and you'd know coffee. And it turns out that people, once they stop trying to draw beautifully, they discover they can speak this other language. And kids already can speak that language. They lose it. They lose it around, I don't know, about 8 or 9. It's getting younger and younger because they don't use their hands as much anymore. But it actually is a language. And this language facilitates all sorts of things in terms of, again, intuition and discovery, which I think are the most important things.
So it's interesting, just to go back, you said you want to unhinge the cart of drawing from art. And here you are, you're working in the art department at the university. Is there a case to be made that it is still art, or do you think what do you think is going on that it's seen as a language?
Well, it is still art, but the problem with art is at a certain age, people only think only artists can do art. And the people that I work with at the university, so my title is assistant professor in interdisciplinary creativity.
Very impressive.
Which my husband calls me Professor Long Title. So for me, there's a writing as a strong component of the work that we do. It's more along the lines of comics and cartoons. So it is within the art department, but I recruit heavily from other areas of the university, and my best classes are ones that are mixed with people from the hard sciences and the soft sciences and, you know, all around the university.
I want to ask you about one of my favorite pieces as we wrap up here. There's a picture of a chicken made out of cotton balls, some glue. I imagine there's some scissors involved in there at some point. And here's the quote. It says, "Sometimes in life, when we are very sad, it is good to make a chicken in winter. It is not a beautiful chicken, but it is a chicken that will guard you through the hours and hours quietly." Tell me about that winter chicken piece.
Well, you know, when people get stuck and really depressed, one of the things that they do is they either just get on the internet and flip around, like, you know, they remind me of gamblers, because it is like gambling. Maybe this time I'll score and find something interesting.
Like pulling the lever on a slot machine.
Yeah. Or they sit very still. But I've found that if I can even get people to just tear up pieces of paper and glue, draw a quick shape of a chicken, tear up a bunch of paper or cotton balls and just start to glue them down, there's some other state of mind that comes about. And it's like a different system in the brain that seems to address. It doesn't cure the depression, but you do feel like you have company. Like, I call that my service chicken. You know, people have service animals. So this is my service chicken. So there's just something about doing something with our hands, the original digital devices, that has everything to do with being able to help ourselves out of the normal human jams we all run into.
Linda, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, I'm so happy to be here. It's so good to see you. And I want to say hello to everybody out there in Wisconsin land as a badger.
That was cartoonist, novelist, and UW-Madison art professor Linda Berry talking with Veronica Rickert. Berry's new exhibit called Drawing Fast and Slow is on display now in the Community Concourse area at the Madison Children's Museum.